Mr. Corriel 6. Now, just before we leave Italy, one thing that some of the people have told me is that, that the dispatch riders, because they went everywhere and, you know, they were attached to the headquarters things, knew what was going on, and not only knew what was going on, started a lot of the rumours or certainly carried them on. Would you say that was true or not? What sort of things would you pass around?
Well, if you go to headquarters, you get more information from the headquarters than anywhere else. And you hear a whiff of it. I mean, what I kind of mostly came out through, we're going to go to the Middle East, and we're going to come out the lane, and we're going back in the lane, certain places, all true. There was one perfect example when we were in, it was in Austria, it happened. As I sent the headquarters a message, in Bleiberg, and I was in Brooklyn, I was coming back. I did this factor, and one was envelope was very slack. I put the pedigree in the envelope. On receipt of this letter, you will immediately call a company search without informing anybody, and anyone caught with any weapons, revolver, etc., etc., will be put on a charge in for a violation, you see? So instead of going back and looking by the village, I went the roundabout way and came the opposite way, so I hit my billet first, you see. So I stopped the bank just outside the billet, goes in and warns all the lads, you see. So then they all got that revolver in there, and they give them to us. I put them in my pocket, and I went back out the way I came, went to the river, and tossed a lot in, you see. The father comes in, they're all clear, you see. So then I goes back down the other way and comes back into the village correctly. Well, I had been all warned. I couldn't do much more about it, you see. I mean, I had took my immediate friends with me. And he went around warning the rest, you see. So when I came in a quarter hour later, pushed the office, made a sticker, gave them the dispatch and everything. Next thing I know, Maloney standing here. Right, everybody on parade. Called them all out. And then I had a search of everybody's gear. You came ready with a search, all your gear, all your, everything you had. Then I found a one. He was looking at me, he was looking at me. Because he knew someone had it, see. He never separated. They'd all transport. Well, one had a revolver in his tool locker, hadn't he? And he hadn't tested it. He was going. But the rest,
you often open messages like
no,
that?
No, very rare. It was nearly open and I was just starting to have a smoke and a little bit.
Where would you get your information from normally about moves and things?
Only from the orderly office. One of the drivers in the orderly office, you know, when you're being to see you were a driver or somebody like that, you know, we're all very friendly. Yeah, they can.
And how would they know?
Well, in the office when these telly messages come into the CEO, they have more access to them than anybody else.
And who you would pass the information to your friends in the?
Yeah.
Right. Now the next move was an unusual move because you moved from Italy to Greece by air. Well, a lot of them went by air.
The next move was. We got a fortnight holiday in Rome. So I was on the advance party and left at 5 o'clock in the morning. I get in the room, I would say about 2 o'clock. Get in the room, go to the old barracks. They were beautiful barracks. The officer in charge, I can't remember who it was. The officer in charge, and get us up to the your best they do. He says, there's a pass. Go to a police post in Rome, leave your bike there, have a couple of hours in Rome, and then go meet the main party and get back here and make a new pass. So I did that. I was kind of left that room to a bear out in Rome. I went to the main party and I took them back 7 or 8 kilometres to this barracks. So the CEO made an announcement. He says, well, there, confine the barracks tonight. He says, there's a 5-course meal on for you. He says, there's beer here for you. He says, tomorrow you start a fortnight's holiday. It's on your best behaviour, with no restrictions, but it will be on your best behaviour. is who had a kind mate when the family came up at 7 o'clock. 2 o'clock in the morning, we balanced noise. Everybody up. Full field match in order, every Sunday. We'll walk about, see the event, leave every day. Outside there was TCV to be in. Everybody piled under these. Oh, I said, there must have been 2 of them back up in the line again, you see. No mayor at all. The quarters were. One of the quarters, straight over the pigweed, landed at Kalamaki at a dome. We got a fight on the way up. There was a sniper as well, not a good fight. And then they made us speak what was happening in 1960, you know.
Did you understand what was happening?
Well, they tried to tell me that the communists had tried to take over when the Germans left, you see. And
that would be the ELAS.
ELAS and KPI. There was 2 of us. And we went through the main road in Athens. And we came back guarding that main road. The sniper went on the road to Piraeus, going by the harbour. Attack a house there, I think it was a bit of a constant house, but they were holding that, and we attacked that house and we took that house.
What was the fighting like, compared to?
Well, it was the queerest. When we got to Piraeus, it had a main road in Piraeus, we formed a barrier across the road, and we were in the house at this side of it, there were a couple of behind me there, and then we had one platoon in front of the house, and there was a barrier across the road. No further up the street, the ELAS had a barrier across the road. So everybody through the night was fairly each other, and they couldn't know where you were, and we were in the kitchen. And through the day, you went through your barrier into the shops, in the wine and bar. They came through, they were dancing with you, they were kissing you, so they go back at night, and then you were fairly each other. It was the funniest war I was ever in. Search everybody who was going, it had to be a full search, even if it had to be a full search. And one night, in this first thing, Sergeant Major came to us, he says, right, he says, we're going over there, left out with Peels. Then it was in the platoon, it was in that company bus. He said, very well, this is going to be an attack there, I want to go on. Well, this time we were at 10 at night. It was dark, so we went in front of our barrier, and we were very careful, because we were in front of our barrier, and they say, what it is, so we were there, all we could hear was the piano playing and singing and drunk and singing. And I never forget the song he was singing with our piano, I don't recall me even. So, sideways, I bustled his way in there, left him with the piano playing the piano, drunk as a kitty cat, obviously, he was bad at it. And the rest were all, and for some people, they were all drunk. No guards on the door. He decided to be a tiger, so sensitive, but he couldn't. And the finisher left hand order him away. He came back, he said, well, I couldn't make that. So we went about it, all right, sure enough, and it wasn't attacked. And the house he was in was blown up. He got took prisoner.
Yeah, I mean, how many men did he have some soldiers with him? How many?
Well, yeah, there were 30 men in the house, and as I say, if Maloney had opened his mouth aside to me, he would have been court-martialed. So
but Whitfield would have been called.
He would have been court-martialed.
And this is the platoon that was captured?
Yeah.
The whole because in the history they'd refer to a whole platoon being captured and marched off.
That was the one. It was right there, the left of us, about 50 yards in front of the barrier, into a little side street, you know.
And that...
Just like that cuts away, go to a wound, struck the other day, okay, that's what it was, and that side street. Now, the first house on the right was a big house, not all in there.
And that's why you feel they were taken by surprise, because they were drunk?
Well, drunk, that's what it is. Because we went to warn them. We risked ourselves going out to tell them. And they just ignored it, they didn't notice it. And we said, look what I do. So it was away at the time of the conference, you see, in Athens itself, you see. Now, there was no officer there when the attack came on. They just left with the money and went out after ourselves, so to start, you see. And the queerest, it was the queerest war ever. I remember looking at the skate later, I got the escape from the family.
What did you think of the ELAS people. Did you have any? I mean, you said you mingle with them in the day. Did you have any sympathy for them? They had been fighting the Germans.
They had been fighting the Germans, but they were ruthless. They were ruthless.
In what way?
Because pretty much the war, they took their shoes off and made them march in their bare feet.
How did you know that, though?
When the lads have came back.
What?
The lads have escaped. They said they took some of them. You know.
Did they use women as a cover at all?
Oh, yeah.
Did you actually see that? What would they do?
Yes, definitely did. I mean, there was at the end of the barrier, to the right, there was a tram shed where they kept the trams in. Well, the lads thought they were in charge of the engineers, and he's in charge of the tram shed. So they came one day and asked them for a tram for to take supplies over the city. Well, anybody who had any common sense they couldn't taste the barrier over the city because there was no electricity on. But he let them have a tram, they pushed it out, and they pushed it 200 yards away, turned it over, they used that as a barrier against us. Started firing over the couple of trams. Well, they were able to shoot them. But another occasion, with this tram, when they were pushing across the field, they had kids trailing behind them. So if we had realised it, like, you know, at the time, we had run over the time, make sure we wouldn't shoot them for the kids in there. It sort of ticks like that. And they tried to get ammunition through the middle when we were searching. Ammunition.
What would you do when you found ammunition on them?
Confiscate it and then hand them over to an officer for interrogation. But the queerest whatever.
Did you ever have to open fire on the crowds? I mean, you know, when...
We went ahead, yes.
But not at them.
Yeah. I've never seen anybody shoot a woman or a kid or shooting at them.
So as a tactic, it worked for the ELAS.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of sniper fire on your positions?
Oh, sniper fire all the time.
Did you have many casualties?
Oh, quite a few.
Now you were clearing the way up the. We were meant to be clearing this road between Athens and the Piraeus and the rest of it, down at the dock area and things. How did you go about that?
Well, we went in and attacked the houses. House fight, which I've been trained for. And then when we...
How would you do it? And what was the method you'd been taught?
Well, if we knew definitely ELAS in there, we'd have a grenade and drop it through the window.
What about civilians? I mean, how...
You know, we're at the table, there was no civilian. There was no civilian there. We'd just surround the house and then make a bayonet attack on the side. But never very many came out. They always came up and seen us. And we would hand it over, the hand for some... An artillery there, artillery lads, with no artillery, and they took a hold of the position on the streets that we cleared. They held it.
So you throw a grenade in, and then what? Say if there was just ELAS in the house, you threw a grenade in, then?
Well, if they didn't know, come over and we went in. It was a different thing entirely. There was nothing booby trapped there. You could
Did you take prisoners when you went on? And what about this attack on, you said it was the old British consul, do you remember that at all? What happened?
Well, we attacked it because the ELAS was wounded. And of course when the seamen came out of course, because it was a company attack and they just scattered over that.
Was that the usual thing, if you attacked in force, they'd scarper? How did you get on with the actual Greek civilians, and how did they get on with ELAS?
They were frightened of ELAS. They couldn't do anything while ELAS was there. But as soon as ELAS left, they were great. Yeah. So the best people in the world are the Greeks. Very, very sociable, hospitable. They'd give you their last. They were really nice.
Now, the fighting died down, did it? What do you remember of the end of? Because it didn't last long, the actual fighting with ELAS, did it? You got there in December and...
It didn't last very long, the actual fighting. Well, it was about mid-February, I think, and then when it died down, we got sent by boat it had actually died on 2 o'clock, and then we got called again by boat at the class. And when I went, we were still taking the class for a few hours, and we went in, there was no opposition at all. I had just left that area about the peninsula. And a few long patrols like over the peninsula, but there was no sign of.
Did you enjoy your time at Patras?
That was very good.
Was there much, did you drink the local wines and spirits?
At times, a few yards of red cedar, an ouzo, with the red cedar. It was like taking quinine, the first one. But after that, I just went up like that, you know.
Was there much drunkenness amongst the men? Because they're stronger than normal beer, you know, what you're used to.
Well, in Patras, Tim was made a military policeman. He had been at the police house, so he tried to keep on a couple of days on the military policeman around the school. So, one more day there, Martin, that was working down like this. He said, "Honey, taps it." He says, "He smoked out because he was giving them tabs all the time." And he said, "Let them out overnight, man. The clock is going to take come back and come back in." Well, I went down the next day, and there was Tim in with the prisoners. I said to him, "What happened here?" He said, "Well, he went to close the canteen last night. And one girl to get a drink, the one girl to get a drink." He said, and he was able to look at us. He said, "My Lord, the other came round 2 hours later." He said something to Tim Clapton.
He was a character, this Kelly.
Oh,
was,
aye, he was.
Now, had you been doing any dispatch riding in Greece at all? Because you'd left your bike behind.
But we were supplying all the new bikes.
Did you have to be careful with all the sniping in?
The worst thing I had was going up the Acropolis and I had a company in there.
And what happened?
I was smiting all over the place. Well, I dropped that pillar, you know, they're on. I got a lot of smiting.
Now, at the end of your time at Patras, you know, you were pulled back and then that was the end. You were going back to Italy. Did you?
I went back to Fallaro.
Sorry, yes, just before. Was it one of a traditional Christmas dinner?
Oh, we couldn't have any time ahead of us fighting it on Christmas Day, so we had it on February the 12th. We promised we have a Christmas dinner, we had it on February the 12th.
And was it one of the ones where the officers and sergeants served the men? Or? Anything about the time at Fallon before you left?
Yeah, not particularly. It was a quite restful day. It's a holiday resort of a soldier from Fallon. Just up from Matthew, we used to travel up after we buy a bus. There used to be a wooden 60-hour bus. There was no restriction on the buses.
And when you came to go back to Italy, how did you feel? I mean, did you think the war was coming to, did you know the war was coming to an end, or did you think?
Oh, well, I hope it was. When we got back there, the commander came down and
that's in April, yes.
Yeah, then we started to move the line again. We got as far as Foley. We went to a place called Foley, just outside of Foley, Foley Poppy. And we were there when we got new cat finished.
So you didn't actually go back in? Do you remember any particular celebrations when you heard the war was over?
We put all the money together and sent for a carboy of wine. The people knew it well. I said, "Go down to Foley and get a carboy of wine." So it was about 8 or 9 kilometers. So we come back very, very slow money and bump with the road, you know, two in the back holding the carboy down. And this great big glass carboy. Massive. It just come in this farm here. And he went down in a ditch, crashed, and there was a wine pouring out the side. He was on that cupboard, he was away. I've never seen him for a couple of days. That was our celebration.
So you lost your wine.
I lost all that.
The
next. That's a great celebration day, the next day. But this was the first night I've gone home.
What about the next day then? What?
Well, I had Gail had a horse racing and things like that. We set it back that way.
They decorated the jeeps, I believe. What was that all about?
Well, they did lend the old carnivals at home and used to decorate the store horses, not just there. Chinese, but there.
Now, you started moving up after, you know, about the 11th of May, they started to move up towards Austria. What do you remember about the journey up there?
Well, the journey up there was very hot and tailing day on the first day. And I was on a bike and I was absolutely swelling. And then we pulled into this place for dinner. Just a, and there was a mountain stew. I deal everybody stood up. No, I said, I think it's cool in my life. There's nobody lasted more than a minute. You came out, you were absolutely shivering. When you dried out, you feel like that. But I've never seen what that is cool in my life come from the mountains. So I have a tiffin in there, and I said, about. And then he says, and take off again, Jack Pannell. Give me for coming, and I said, he would have made.
Had you driven one before? Yeah, I mean, you'd learnt on the card and Lloyd, but...
I drove a 1500, we had labour for that, so to say, you know, in between. I could drive, but I wasn't a driver, and you weren't allowed to drive if you want a driver. He says, well, I'll take responsibility for your driver or not. And it was a lot winding old road through the Alps. And I thought, it was a terrifying night, really. All you could see was a cattle boat, 2,000 feet down below you on one side, and you had a convoy, and it was all gravelly roads, slidey. And Harry Hutchinson, the driver, was sleeping next to us, and he had been driving all day. The fucker had been driving the bike all day, like, but that meant nothing. The driver had been driving all day. So yes, the next morning, about 5:30, 5:45, I guess on the good roads in Austria. And he wakes up, only he started taking what I know what he could say. Imagine what I told him, I know, bugger, if I drove all in, I'm going to drive on the good roads for a change. So then I went up for breakfast, like, and he took over. And we went to Clarendon, I believe it was, and then Clarendon.
That's right, they went up to Unsmarkt and then back to Blyberg, I think. Now, not long, you know, around about the 14th and 15th, there was a lot going on in Austria with the Yugoslavs, the Croats, the Serbs, Cossacks, Germans, everybody mixed up together. Now, did you understand at the time what was going on or who was
doing? All I understood is that we are trying to disarm the partisans that was in our area.
Now, they were Yugoslavian partisans,
yeah.
Tito's lot.
Yeah.
How did you go about that?
Well, how they went about it is, our officers organised a dance. Invited their officers over. When their officers over, they went in and disarmed them, because that was where they were leaving. They didn't succeed as that. But the woman was the worst of the rifles. They were.
Now, what about the Croats? I mean, there were a whole lot of them that were being marched back into Yugoslavia,
yeah,
by the Yugoslavs or by someone. I mean, you might not have known who. What do you remember of that? Because I believe you saw them at Blyberg. If you could tell us what exactly you saw.
Well, just sort of get mad back, and we didn't interfere there. We had no. I had no reason to fear with that.
What could you see? How many of them were there? What?
There were hundreds and hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds of them. But the partisans that were staying about.
They were being guarded by the partisans. And where were you when you saw them?
By Klagenfurt.
Blyberg.
Blyberg. By Blyberg, yeah.
And I believe they went across the bridge and back over into Yugoslavia.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And what did you see?
We're just getting marched back there into Yugoslavia by the partisans of Soviet Union. You're not seeing a new treatment out of there.
Weren't even trying to escape or jumping off the bridge or anything there?
No, that was a Russian that.
That's later on.
That was later on and brutal. That was a Russian that. There was a few men.
So the Yugoslavians, the Croats, were being fairly passive when they were marched back.
Yeah.
Anything else about your time at Blyberg?
Yeah, but in Brooklyn, we had a compound made for the prisoners of war.
Now that's a bit later. You moved off from Blyberg up to Brooklyn around about 24th of May.
Yeah.
And what was happening there? You say you had a compound.
We built a compound for prisoners of war.
German or Cossacks?
Russians.
Were they the Cossacks?
Yeah, Operation Cossack.
Were they the Cossacks who'd been fighting for the Germans?
Yeah. They'd been fighting for the Germans, you see. And they came through and killed and loved their horses, but I loved their horses with them. We had a field full of horses.
Now, you were just supposed to be rounding up, dehorsing and disarming this brigade.
Yeah, we sent them over to came through, disarmed them and put them in this compound.
Did they show any resistance as they came in?
None at all.
Did they know they were going to be sent back? Because they were sent back.
I don't think they did. They were too quiet for it.
So they were quite happy to be...
Quite happy to be prisoners of war with us.
And you were guarding them?
Yeah. They took no guard. Made no attempt to escape by anything.
How were they penned in? I mean, what it was in a camp, but what sort of a...
Way on, barbed wire, compound.
How high the fence?
Oh, 7 foot.
So not that serious, and
not that serious. Of course, I'm guarding the old sailing, but...
Do you think they could have got away if they'd wanted to? About how many were there, then? Were there other camps... Or was just the one that they had? Was it a company that was there, or
B company?
That was all that you were at with this camp, and so you were guarding them for a couple, 2 or 3 days, and then what happened?
TCVs came.
TCVs are.
Two cargo vehicles. They lured them on them, and when we were on the bank with them. I seen them when they got this big high thing where we were, could you relieve them and hand them over to the Russians? Climbed over the top, kill ourselves. And they did.
So they were breaking out of the lorries or whatever.
And when they realized going back to Russia.
And diving off this bridge.
Yeah.
Who was guarding them at the time?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. It was a company that came in, a special company for the taking of the way.
So the DLI didn't actually escort them to the border. Which bridge was this?
I couldn't tell you.
Was it near Brooklyn?
No, it was towards where we were taking them up.
You'd driven with them on your bike, though. Why had you gone with them? So you weren't ordered to. You were just riding along on your bike.
Yeah.
And what was the company that you know doing that was meant to be guarding them as they were flinging themselves off the bridge? Were they trying to stop them or what?
Well, they were just driving. There's only one in the back, and one man couldn't stop them. You know, they're just driving. There's one man in the back, each one, and one in front of the driver. When they stopped that van, of course they were. A lot of them jumped over.
Why didn't they just run away? Why jump over the bridge? You see.
Probably it was useless because they were in their territory, maybe then. I don't know. Well,
how close were you to seeing to this?
Yards.
So they might not have been in British territory as far.
Yes.
What did you think?
Then.
What did you think of what you saw? I mean, what did you think was going on?
Well, I realised that they were told they were going to get shot when they went back, and when there were no hands off passage, we thought it was safe. And we went and had to come back to them again. As far as I was concerned.
You thought that at the time? Did you think that at the time? Because it's very controversial.
At the time, yes.
Did many of the men think that?
Yes, all of them did.
Do you think you could have done anything?
We couldn't have done anything. Not as sure that they couldn't, you just got to do what you're told and do the otherwise.
But you thought it was a dirty job?
Yeah. That'd be built up there, or a prisoner of the Russians. Then the next thing, we handed them back to the Russians against all principles as far as I was concerned.